Now, the first one is extended to the end space you see as well. So it just comes from the first row and the second one.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Rohit Nashpati. I'm the Acting Deputy Director General at the Department of Public Enterprise. Chair, inserted in the broader denial delegation, I'm representative from my external auditors.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Louis von der Baum, audit partner, Ernst & Young.
Morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is CJ Kudenga, audit partner, Ernst & Young.
Thank you, and morning, Chair. My name is Stephen Mutumi, Department of Defense, Acting Secretary for Defense. With me, I have the financial officer to my left. So could you introduce yourself?
Good morning, my name is Dr. Tosca Mede, the Chief of Police Strategy and Planning.
Good morning, Chair and the committee. My name is Vitali Tata. I'm Chief Director of Strategic Management in the Defense Department.
Good morning, I'm Dr. Mede, Chief of
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. I'm Raymond Nadu. I'm the Director of Material Governance, Department of Defense.
Morning, Chair. I'm Kenneth Kikumbu from the FDR.
Good morning, Chair.
I'm Rudy Fisher. I'm from the Chief of Interior Department of Defense.
Morning, Chair and members. Major General Gazzoli. I'm the Government Information Technology Officer in the Department of Defense.
Good morning, Chair. Honourable Members of Parliament, Major General Ian Masala, the Chief Director of Human Resource Management, Department of Health and Development. Good morning, Chair and the Committee General, I'm responsible for supporting the Army.
Good morning, Chair. Major General Ngoli Sipetane, Inspector General of the Department of Defense.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lieutenant General Fakiana, Chief of the Air Force.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. I'm Brigadier General Leon Higgins, DOC Signal Information.
Morning, Chair. I'm Dr. Clarence Derek. I'm the Minister of Defence.
Right. Thank you very much. Sir, can you introduce yourself and your certification?
Chair, good morning, members of the committee. My name is Kini Makuni, Deputy Auditor General. And on my right hand side, my colleague is the
morning, Chair. My name is Musa Shongwa. I'm the business executive responsible for the audit of the Department of Defense, among others. On my right, I have Chiam Kilov, who is the senior manager of the Department of Defense. On the audit of the Department of Defense, I also have Yan Tienka, who is also
Good morning, Chair. My name is Tebo Musikara from National Treasury.
Thank you very much. We'll then allow members of Parliament to introduce themselves.
I'm Faith Mukambi, a member of COPA in Parliament.
I'm Nyame Zeliboy, the chair of the French Community Council.
Morning. I'm Tabelo Chilean, member of the COPA.
Good morning, I'm Mark Steele, member of SCOTA.
Good morning, my name is David Mania. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans and an alternate member on SCOTA.
Good morning, my name is Deirdre Sintoy. I'm with SCOTA.
Morning, everyone. Trevor Bonham, of Scotland. Thank you. Trevor,
I'm Lorraine Singh, a member of this committee.
Good morning. I'm Lorraine Mashiani, a member of Scotland.
Good morning, Gerard Cuerno, member of the Portfolio Committee of Public Enterprise.
Good morning, my colleague. Nelson Diana, member of the Portfolio Committee of Defense and Welfare Veterans. Thank you.
Good morning, James Varma. I'm a member of the Committee on Defense and Military Veterans.
James Moran.
All right, thanks very much. I'm Comrade Temo Godi. I chair the committee. Right, we're happy to
representation of the Department of Defense and military veterans, as well as the National Party of Finance. Before we go any further, may I request that we switch our cellular phones off, not even on silent, because the police have been recorded, so if your cellular phone might ring or ring, it affects the recording. So, and please discuss by consciously going out to make sure you. Well, once again, welcome. May I say that as you all appreciate, Parliament has a responsibility to do oversight on the work of the executive. Either by the Minister himself coming to clarify and explain certain processes and things within Parliament, or through the officials in the department, or the parastatals that fall within that department. For us in this committee, we in large measure would interact with departments and public entities on the strength of the report of the Auditor General or the annual report of the Parliament. If there are issues that we believe we need to have a face-to-face interaction to get better clarity so that we can be able to report to Parliament well or better, we would usually make a request to come and gather like this. So the fundamental purpose of this exercise is a very simple and straightforward one. It shouldn't take us long, really, because it is purely and only meant to request for clarity certain areas so that we can be able to not only understand the work that you have done during the year under review, but also for us to be able to respond to clarity with better clarity about issues, about problems. So that is the objective of the exercise. I must stress right from the beginning that time is a commodity which not have in that supply. So for members, as I always say, that we pointed with our questions and the responses should be valid points. Don't mind the background, don't mind the content. Just give me an answer. I'm sure at the end of the process we'll be able to much clearer in the future. In terms of our program, we will start to engage with the services and your report. But for us to get going, I would give honorable speech to assist us in that process. Honorable speech.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. There could quite easily be a coup here today. Certainly outnumbered as members of the portfolio committee. But notwithstanding that, Chair, thank you for the opportunity on behalf of the committee to ask questions of its management on this annual report of 2009. Chairperson, my focus is going to be on the commercial viability of the group and the impact of the restructuring strategy. That's the going concern issue. The accumulated losses that NL has suffered, the further losses and the amelioration thereof. I'm going to be focusing some questions on the Roy Falk loss provision and then the recapitalization progress on that. And finally, I think, on the role and responsibilities of the board and the effectiveness of the board. Chairperson, I've been looking at pages 24 to 27 of the report to find that there are 16 directors that have been listed there, and on pages 26 and 27, general executives, there are 17. And looking through the very short CVs of many of these individuals, one would appreciate that they come from various backgrounds with different kinds of qualifications. I'm also going to be asking questions on the remuneration policy and the fact that there are certain members of the executive that sit as invitees. Invitees on the Personnel and Remuneration Committee. The reason I'm doing this chair giving background is that when I ask the first question, I don't want the answer to the last question. So they can focus their mind on what I'm going to be asking. Chairperson, firstly, it is stated on page 56 of the report that, amongst other things, the narrow delegation of authority outlines that the board reserves specific matters for decision-making and responsibility. These include the approval of, and I'm focusing on this, group strategy, long-term business plans, and annual budgets. It's also stated on page 57 that there is continuous evaluation of the board, and you found that it is effective, that the board is effective. What I'd like to know is, who evaluates the performance of the board? We read somewhere that there's an independent corporate governance expert. Who is this expert or experts that evaluate? How does the board get a good rating when it has incurred a loss of 543.9 million, let alone the accumulated losses?
Okay, all right.
The Institute of Directors. That's the Institute of Directors, the IOD. There was an evaluation.
Right. Institute of Directors.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much for that answer. What I'd like to know is, do you think as a board you are effective? When there's so much accumulated losses, you've got 543.9 million rand loss this year, in the year under report, and projected losses in the future.
In a nutshell, yes, we think we are. However, to answer the question fully requires that we explore the bigger context and challenges within which Danel operates. And I must hasten to add from the outset that I would invite my colleagues as one response to that question. So it might be best, I think, to respond to particular questions and then take the broader context a little later, unless one needs to talk very broadly at the same
time. Chairperson, reading this report, I mean, one gets the sense that Danel is bankrupt. How would you respond to that? Are you a bankrupt organization getting deeper and deeper into the mire? Or are you an organization that, that can get out of the rut and be a viable operational organization?
We are most definitely an organization that can get out of the rut. We believe that the plan that was articulated as far back as 2006 on the turnaround of Danel is a plan that can deliver a Danel, an organization, that is commercially viable. It won't necessarily be a single monolithic entity, but will comprise a number of, at least in the ideal, of entities that are individually commercially viable, that operate in a variety of markets, that may be partners appropriate on a horses-for-courses basis with other players in the respective sectors. And that was spelled out in detail, and we stick to as a board to the pursuit of that strategy. Now, it is not always easy, of course, to then implement in different sectors in accordance and as speedily as one might have wanted, in particular because there are also inputs and interests that one has to take into account from a variety of other stakeholders. But we can give examples of that. With regard to the current financial predicament, may I ask the CEO and the chair of the audience?
Let's go to that. I think the ethnic one, are you a bankrupt organization? Do you think you can take yourself out of the money? I said yes, know such as you can. I didn't check with you, didn't say we.
Thank you, Chairperson. The general strategy that you've been referred to, and that was implemented in 2006, so that was put on the table, is dependent on a number of variables. And one of the variables is the recapitalization, and the 1.7 billion rand, which is on page 62 of the annual report, where you say Danel has requested a further recapitalization of 1.7 billion from its shareholder. Can you tell us whether that has been met, and how is that going to impact on your general strategy 4 years down the line?
The balance to which you refer, the 1.7 billion, has not. And we indicated at the time of our crafting of the strategy. When I say the turnaround strategy, again, I'm by no means intending to distance myself or the board from the strategy. We unambiguously own the strategy and are committed to it. And the number of 5.2 billion was a number that we believed was necessary in order that we may get to a point where indeed we don't continue to be dependent upon the fiscus. And now it becomes, of course, rather challenging when the instrument by which we are provided support includes also loans and guarantees and so on instead of capitalization. That's the context. Now, if the reality is that because of the circumstances we find ourselves in nationally as a country, that it is simply not feasible for further funding to come available, 1.7 billion, then clearly we have to revise the strategy and cut our cloth according to the circumstances in which we find ourselves. And that may have a variety of implications, including closure of various businesses, which may not necessarily have been envisaged in our original.
Chair, thank you. Then my question is the 1.7 billion, you haven't received that?
No, we have not received the 1.7 billion.
When was it promised to you? It is indicated here. And knowing that you haven't received it and knowing the recession that we are going through, do you think you will ever receive it? And are you thinking about a new strategy to turn this organization around?
We indeed are. And we are conscious of it. Always when we plan, we don't plan on the basis merely of a single scenario, a single path. There are questions we ask. If this happens, then what do we do? And if that happens, then what do we do? And we have clearly a plan on the basis of not simply throwing our hands in the air in the event that 1.7 billion does not happen. And then we can talk some more about that. And that's what I'd like to invite the people to expand.
But the current scenario strategy was pretty much in the main on you getting the recapitalization amount or not?
The high road was a total amount of 5.2 billion. We got an amount which was 1.7 billion short. So the ideal in our thinking would have been that yes indeed, the ideal would have been to receive 1.7 billion.
What I'm trying to find out is that as we're talking now, the strategy is premised on what? On what you already have got or on what you have supposed to get?
We are revising the strategy in accordance with our expected
being revised. So there is no strategy in place right now that is fixed. In the sense that you're in the process of revising what is there.
No, it is the foolhardy. When I say revised, it is the foolhardy only to have a single possible scenario because it's dependent upon other factors that are not in our control. So of necessity, we explore a variety of possibilities. What happened if and what happened if? And we are in a position where, if indeed it is the case that the 1.7 billion is not forthcoming, then we have to move forward on the basis.
I want us to take it from the conceptual to the practical. The practical reality is you develop this narrow strategy premised on you getting a particular amount. Now you have not gotten that amount. Right?
And
so now you are revising your strategy on the basis of the current reality.
That's correct.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wonder if Treasury can respond to us on this at some stage about the recapitalization and what Treasury is doing about it and whether they've received any requests. Well, it would seem that they have received some requests. But I just want to go back to the question that I asked earlier on, because the independent auditors of Danel have themselves cast significant doubt about Danel's ability to continue as a going concern. What is your response to that? Do you share the response?
Yes.
Thank you. The concern relates to the fact that the entity has been operating on a loss basis for the past 10 years. And you pick that up when you look at our financial statements on page, on the 10-year overview on pages 92 to 93. And the concern is that if an organization continues to cause such losses, it would then erode the solvency of the organization. And it's, I would also like to correct an earlier point that was made that Danel is bankrupt. If you look at this particular page, it would inform you that Danel is not bankrupt as we address you, because we do have a healthy solvency reserve and we are liquid in the organization. But that is backed up by strong government support in the form of guarantees. In terms of the going concern, it's looking at the losses of the company in the past years, and it is important that some aspects of our strategy are implemented. The specific areas relating to concluding strategic equity partnerships and also securing access to the local defense spend, not only for Danel but the broader defense industry. Other aspects of the strategy that we have successfully implemented has been the disposal of non-core entities and has been improved governance and raising capabilities and productivity.
Chairperson, I just want to put on record, I didn't suggest that you are bankrupt. I asked, in your opinion, whether you think you are bankrupt or not, and the CEO says they're not bankrupt. But there again, there's a condition. It's based on government supporting and guarantees. Now, I mean, here's the situation. It's government, and we know what government is facing now with the recession. That's not our doing. I mean, if those guarantees are not forthcoming and don't continue, what happens to the organization?
To respond on that, you are receiving a presentation by Danel, and the government of South Africa is a shareholder of Danel. In any entity where you have shareholders, at the time when the organization is going through financial challenges, you would expect the shareholder to come to the table and provide whatever commitment that's required. At the time when Danel embarked on the strategy, it was premised on us receiving the 5.2 billion rand recapitalization. And again, if you look at pages 93 to 92, what you would see is that since Danel embarked on the strategy, there's been a significant reduction in the losses from about 1.6 billion rand in 2005 to 544 million rand in 2009. Are we happy making a loss? Definitely not. We have seen with the implementation of our strategy, we've seen really good results emerging from those companies, especially if one just looks at the bottom line on it.
I think that's a much more point to clarify the situation. I think from the number five, you say that the entity has been having losses for the past 10 years. And surely, from an oversight perspective, for 10 years you're making losses, then the issue of going concern should do very large amount. Now, you're saying from 2006 to 1.6 billion,
2005.
Right now, it is about half a billion. 543. So you are saying, take heart, we're making progress, we're getting there. But a lot remains a lot. Because the shareholder must make a decision whether it wants to keep the nail floating, whether it makes a loss or it makes a profit. Once that decision is taken, then we may have a different argument.
Chairperson, I just want to put it to Danel then. While you are making these losses, half a billion rand is a lot of money. If one looks at page 140, 141, 142, 143, and you look at the emoluments and the salaries that have been paid to directors and the bonuses for performance, what performance and what directors and who evaluates? There's a personnel, I see there's a personnel and remuneration committee where some of your executive directors serve as invitees. What does that mean? What influence do the executive directors have on the personnel and remuneration committee? Because it's amazing that such large sums of money have been paid in performance bonuses.
colleague Lydia about what performance.
What exactly is regarding the structure of the PNR committee, which non-executive members of the board, the subcommittee of the board that makes recommendations to the main board. Regarding the philosophy underpinning performance, we need to clarify from the outset here that what we're talking about is a component of remuneration that is guaranteed pay, and a component that is variable, that is dependent upon performance. And this is to provide incentives for people to do better than targets. Even though there may be losses, the reality is that there are targets. The targets here are continued improvement. And to the extent that those targets are attained and exceeded, then one rewards people in accordance with what has been agreed by way of the level of variable pay that has been agreed upon. It does not mean that one should not just look at a snapshot.
If people get bonus information targets, then what is the monthly salary for? For each target to get a bonus, and every month you get paid. How do you explain this to?
I think first one must explain that when one refers to targets, they are not merely referring to turning up and doing a job, but talking about stretch targets, of actually really hard targets of ensuring that the business is indeed showing success. The other is that the reality is that, in fact, what happened two, 3 years ago is that we took a particular view that pay increases would be quite low, lower than the pay increases that were being paid in various other institutions. And then what would then happen is that people would be behind the curve regarding the increase and therefore guaranteed pay levels that are below typical market levels. And then that, however, people in a non-guaranteed manner expect to be able to make the cut, provided that they perform in a manner that is in keeping with targets that have been agreed upon. It's a well understood principle that it is incentivized people by having a system of their own.
No, that's fine. Let us just say the salary structure, as you have it, maybe in the private sector in the past, operates in that way. And I'm sure maybe what we are trying to, what is being raised here is that it is very difficult to raise a consumer argument in that direction. I would imagine that if a person has to achieve certain targets, those are the normal performance expectations of any employee. Now, if you wanted a turnover of 100, that person delivers 135, you would say maybe there's a percentage. But if they deliver 100, the person delivers 100, then you say there's a bonus because you have met the target over and above your salary that you get. I think for us who are not in the industry, it's still a road we are trying to go through to be able to understand and appreciate it.
I think it's a question of definition, just following up on a particular example. Chances are, if indeed 100 were really achievable, we would not say that the target is 100. We would say it would be that 175 to achieve fair. And this issue then do work beyond that 175 that we say that I'm really being upset. In other words, the target we set would already be a stretch target, not just a really attainable target.
Maybe, because I think this is important, it links to that. Yeah, under review, have you met your target?
Yeah, under review.
Under. Have you met your target?
Yeah, under review.
Yes. A target of another loss. Was that your target?
Yes.
Let me understand.
I just want to explain something. I think if you look at the history, and I maybe want us to be short, we can't move a Titanic. You don't move a Titanic in a year. you take it and you put particular strategies in place and you incentivize and you move with all the divisions to change those things slowly. So we look at them individually and we have met our targets. Strict targets are set for all of them to try and change it and get it out of this position. Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry, my thought process has just lost for a moment, but in terms of the year under review, is one talking about the current financial year we're in that ends March 2010, or are you looking at the March 2009? Because in terms of March 2009, as we stated, we have met the targets that have been set, and in terms of the current year we're in,
No, we're talking to figures that are in the global.
Because I was going to respond to moving a challenge in a year. We're talking here about 10 years. Now, the question was around the current year in review, that we are reviewing now. Don't get emotional about it.
Chairperson, yeah.
Can you continue with the question?
Chairperson, the Titanic hit an iceberg, and the rest is history. Now, I think we are here as a committee asking these searching questions to make sure that Denel doesn't hit that iceberg and becomes history in a few years' time. What can be done to turn Denel around? There are a number of variables that are inform the turnaround strategy, which is not in place. So I think they must understand the questions in that context that we're asking. What I'd also like to know, I don't know if there's anybody here from the Department of Public Enterprises, because recently, I think we've seen in the media, the whole question of emoluments, remuneration to those who are in state-owned enterprises. And on page 140, I see a chairperson that there are guidelines on remuneration provided by the Department of Public Enterprises. Maybe it'll be useful for us as a committee to obtain those guidelines at some stage, because we'll always be bringing state-owned enterprises before us. I just want to go back to the question asked earlier on about invitees to the Personnel and Remuneration Committee. What informs that? I mean, why should certain people, the CEO and other executive directors, be invitees on this committee? And is there no conflict of interest in this?
Under normal circumstances, we would be aware, the in meetings of the board, there would be none of that. The structure of the board will be that there have been an executive board members. There may be members of the executive board members of the main board, notably in this particular instance, the CEO and the CFO. However, the board also has subcommittees, the audit and the RAM subcommittee. Now, the view taken by the board, as is good practice in good governance in the various other boards, is that because executives are directly affected by methods to do with setting levels of remuneration, that the PNR subcommittee comprises non-executive members. So that the executive members who may be members of the main board are not members of that particular subcommittee. This is to protect them. That's not the same thing as to say that as and when appropriate, they may not attend, because after all, there are all manner of issues that get discussed that require executive input. But when we discuss specifically what has to do with reward and so on of the individual members of within organization, clearly they cannot have the say. So that's the import, that's the essence of what I say.
Yeah, Chairperson, I asked this question because I see there's 100% attendance on page 59 of some of your executive directors on the Personnel and Remuneration Committee. But I'll leave it at that. I think our colleagues can follow up on that. Just want to go quickly, because time is against us, on the Roy Park program and the loss there. I mean, from what we see and what we read, the Roy Park project is arguably one of the best performing projects of the Denel since inception in the 1980s. But now it's reporting significant risks, shortfall of 280 million rand. Can you briefly tell us about this project and what's going to happen to it?
Let me add a few levels. Perhaps try to talk about the technicalities and how it is going to comment on that, and then perhaps we might talk about the code at least. On the Roy Park program, we have been engaging with a task team that was established by Cabinet called the Denel In-State Task Team.
that was led by the Department of Public Enterprises and the Department of Defense. And one of the issues that we had to look at was Rooibos. There is a proposal that's been developed for a cabinet presentation. The last cabinet presentation took place in June 2008, and there were certain proposals around Rooibos that was made to cabinet. And the follow-up report that we will be presenting now to cabinet is to give them an update and also share with them a few options available on Rooibos and then decide how we move forward. At this stage, from a technical perspective, we haven't yet achieved full certification. There have been technical challenges on the program that remain outstanding. That certification deadline has slipped over a period of time, and there is a target on the table, but we would be engaging with Cabinet through the Department of Public Enterprises and Defense, and then hear how we move forward on Rooibos. Just to add, Chair, on the issue relating to the 280 million rand, that relates to a provision that was made in 2006. A total provision was 680 million rand, and this was to move towards full certification of the Rooibos aircraft. So to date, that's the balance that's outstanding, the provision that we've created. Of the 680, we left with 280.
The Chairperson, recently we read, and then I think the Defense Committee is more aware with this, the Airbus deal and its impact on the organization in Turkey. What are the risks involved? How is that going? And financial impact, positive or negative?
Thank you. The contract that we have with Airbus Military is to an extent independent of the acquisition program by the Department of Defense, but we are at risk. In terms of the contract that we have with Airbus Military, noting that the acquisition program of the 8 military aircraft has been cancelled, Airbus now have the right to cancel the work packages that we currently have with them.
Chairperson, those are some of the issues that have been identified in the report from the Auditor General, but I'm sure colleagues can pick up on some of the other ones. Thanks.
All right. Before I give you comment, Roy, I would want to recognize Comrade Koranov and Honorable Maine. But sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me try to get to the point with Danielle. If you look at your accumulated loss in December to March 2009 of 543 million, the one single entity that contributed to that loss was the NEL staff aerostructures of 452.2 million. That is 83% of your loss was distributed, contributed by PSA. Now, that places the NEL at risk. And DSA is a constraint that prevents the NEL from performing well. Throwing money after it is not going to solve the problem. My question is, what major and dramatic intervention are you envisage or plan to put DSA on the correct path? It cannot be business as usual, because your whole group is now under risk and under threat because of the performance at ESA. So I don't think we can get away without a dramatic major intervention within that business unit to take the risk away from them. That's my first question. Secondly,
maybe let's deal with that question. I'll come back to you.
This is a highly pertinent question, and we're very indeed grateful to the committee for that.
Chair, last year, the year under review, we made a loss of 544. Of that loss, 450 million related to the NEL Talbera Structures. The board had implemented, the NEL board is a shareholder of the NEL Talbera Structures. We own 80% of the company, 20% is held by Swedish based, the South Group. The board mandated management to engage with DSA to implement a turnaround plan. As a member of the DSA board,
We then engaged with international consultants. We looked at the business, and we then went ahead and implemented, and in the process of implementing an aggressive turnaround plan since the beginning of 2009. The key areas that we've been focusing on in our South infrastructure has been around our market repositioning, the kind of work that we have been involved in, looking at the financial performance, looking at our quality and are we delivering on time and within specifications to our customers, looking at our business processes, and introducing a performance-based culture. Across all of those areas, the market with the global economic challenges that are currently prevalent and the impact that it's having on the aerospace industry and the financial performance today, we've indicated that it's red, so we still have a lot of work to do there. On-time quality, quality deliverable, that remains a challenge. We have seen a great improvement in terms of our backlog, but that remains a challenge and we're working on it. Business processes and high-performance culture is also a process that we've embarked upon. So that's a key issue from an operational perspective. From a strategic area, Danel always had a view to be a minority shareholder in Danel South Aerostructures. At the time when we concluded the transaction with South, the intention was that over time South will then take a majority shareholding. So we were planning to be a minority shareholder, and that strategy remains. So what we are looking at doing is going forward to try and broaden the shareholder base. We are also looking at other strategic options that are available locally. Is there an opportunity for local consolidation? Can we team up with other players? Let's look at the complexity of the work that we have been involved in, and let's ensure that that's complemented to our capabilities that we have in place.
I had a question about right from the beginning, having gone through your report, that in response to the concern of going concern, that's what you would assume it, to say, look, Danel is doing a lot because of this component. And then say, this particular component, this is how I want to deal with it, this one, this is how I want to deal with it. Rather than keep it at that generic level, that gives an impression that the totality of the group as a whole. I don't think that was a mistake, but I felt okay. Maybe it's strategic for me, fine, but it because two of the subsidiaries that actually making a loss. So we should have zoned in on that. I don't think that's what we should have done, but now. For the
foreign this is a rotten apple in principle. And that's what the committee is saying to you. And just, I think we should ask that the NEL share this dramatic turnaround strategy and progress made on a continuous basis with the committee, with SCOPA or the portfolio committee, so that we can monitor. Otherwise, we're going to sit next year and it will be the same issue. But I think, and maybe this is a question to the external auditors, because for the 2010 year, that drop, that loss of 452 million drops to 179 million. But there's a 200 million impairment. I assume to the external auditors, that includes the impairments should be impairments because of DSA, which makes it another 400 million loss for DSA for the 2010 year. But it's not a question, it's an observation, unless the auditors wants to respond to it. But it's not a drop in loss, but DSA is probably going to make in excess of 400 million loss for the 2010 year's work. And all we're asking is a dramatic intervention to put that business unity on a correct path, because that is your biggest risk in the now, this one single in our perception. Can I just ask my last question, and that is on the way of in the auditor's report, they state that until such time there is a formal agreement clarifying the specific scope of the work required by the SNDF and the future of the Royal program, there will be a major uncertainty. Where is this formal agreement? Did the cabinet memorandum supersede the original contract or not? And where is this formal agreement? The order to say they haven't seen it, we haven't seen it. Thank you. And hence we are presenting the follow-up cabinet memorandum because we'd like clarification on the cabinet decision. You just keep this company also informed about the decision of it.
Mania?
you, Chair. Just to begin on the lighter note, I must disagree with my honourable colleague, who spoke about coups. At current combat readiness levels and funding levels, there's no prospect of a coup. Chair, I'd like to move on to this business unit, DSA. We recently read about what appears to be a U.S. $45 million bungle with an Augusta wetland deal. Now, what we read is the deal, essentially, was that in return for a waiver of penalties incurred through no fault of Augusta wetland, they would guarantee business in the amount of $45 million dollars over a period of 5 years to, amongst others, companies, DSA. And it appears that somebody, somewhere, has dropped a $45 million dollar ball. Now, my question is, who dropped the ball? And here, particularly, I want to know whether the cabinet was briefed and what is being done to pick up the ball. And again, is cabinet going to be making a decision? And finally, does the NEL support this deal? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I cannot comment on media speculation. So most of the points that the honourable member has raised.
If it's not true, then give us a second.
Okay, from our side, we do not believe we've bungled, nor have we dropped the ball. One of the key strategy pillars that we have implemented since we embarked on our turnaround.
If you have not dropped the ball, then you have the platform to tell the whole country that this is what you're doing.
No problem.
Sure.
Chair, the proposal on the table, we felt it was loss-making. There were also technical challenges on the proposal. We did not believe that it would give us a long-term sustainable solution, and hence we then decided not to explore with that opportunity further. The initial proposal was for the Department of Defense, through its procurement agency, to consider Augusta, the proposal that Augusta had made to them in a favorable manner. That was not the case. We had announced to our subsidiary, we stated, let's explore this and let's look at the merits. And at the end of the day, after that exploration, we then found that we could not go ahead with that proposal. Augusta remains a very important client to us. We are busy with a number of work packages with them. And from our side, we are engaging with them to see how we could continue our business relationship that we do have. The contract that we have with Augusta right now goes up to November 2010, and there are work packages that we are busy with them, and we are looking at extending those work packages.
Right.
Do you
have
a
follow-up?
We are
fine.
No, I'd like to follow up.
Sure.
The NEL considers the merits of this deal, but were the merits of the deal considered by the Department of Public Enterprises or by the Cabinet?
To the best of your knowledge.
Well, from a governance perspective, normally in these sort of transactions, it's within the authority of the NEL board and the NEL management, and we have to separate the NEL from the NEL cloud level structures. That's a separate PTY Limited. It has its own governance structure, and on a board of directors, and the board of directors constitute the NEL and SAR. But perhaps our chairman would like to add.
Yeah, that indeed, the DSA is on the Galantic. There are two members who are on the main.
I think what he wants is the process issue. Where was the process? Was that the appropriate level or not? That's what I wanted to confess.
This is part of the response, Chair, if I may. That the board of DSA handles the matter in accordance with its particular duties as a board, and it was handled at that level. It has not been formally reported back upon as an issue to the board of DSA as shareholder.
Okay. All right. All right. I don't want to follow up on you if it was there.
I have one more question about the board program. Thank you, Chair. We read in the auditor's report to NEL that
a cabinet memorandum which was approved in 2008, essentially that there was agreement as a result of that cabinet memorandum that there would be a freeze on delivery of the Royal South Pulse, a scaling down of the Royal South weapon system, cancellation of all development and upgrades on the Royal South, and the reduction of the operational life of the Royal South to 5 years. Now that says to me that the Royal South program is dead. Is that true?
I think as Donnell, we cannot comment on it because we are executing the Royal Bulk program on behalf of our client. At the moment, we have a contract in place with them, which through the cabinet process, we were seeking to revisit in terms of the particular areas you raised. Another critical aspect around the Royal Bulk program is the OEM risks that are associated with the program. We did an assessment of those OEM risks together with their top team, and it came to us between 350 million rand around there as an OEM obligation, and the Donnell balance sheet could not sustain that OEM obligation. So in terms of the Royal view, I cannot comment on your view. It's your view, but of course we are going ahead with the program. It is a challenge for us, and we're hoping that Cabinet will give us direction on how we go forward.
Okay, I have two comrades, Comrade Roy and Honorable Steve. And I will give the story as well, and then the last one will be Comrade Chapter of the protocol. I'm sorry, Comrade.
Thank you. I think it's that you covered Danielle Tarr. In addition to all your other problems and personnel problems, can you comment on any plan replacement that has taken place or the process of taking place at the DSA? And also, any concern that two senior people have resigned from the CFO and CEO? Can you confirm that and then have taken your confidence as to the reasons for those resignations?
Please, I hope someone has his or his cell phone dropped. Sincerely hope there is no one on board. What?
Right.
Jay, on the retrenchment process, as we have made a public announcement, we are in the process of retrenching about 50% of the staff complement of DSA. As I did state, as part of our turnaround plan, it was to introduce a high performance culture and also looking at the market potential. In light of the many business challenges that exist in DSA, including the global economic challenges, we then have to revisit our cost base. The people cost base at the end and outside of the structure is about 40 to 50% of the cost base. And we are looking at a whole host of costs within DSA in order to reduce the bottom line. We are looking at revenue growth and cost, and hence with that cost being such a big driver, that's an area we have to look at. And the principal focus about that is to improve our levels of productivity, improve our levels of competitiveness in light of our revenue challenge. In terms of the confirmation that the CEO and the CFO the board of DSA did meet and where those resignations were accepted, we have appointed an acting CEO, and we've also managed to ensure that the CFO remains for the year in process. We will be placing an acting person within the Danelle Group to act in that role. So that's on that particular matter. In terms of the reasons why they resigned, I cannot comment on that. Obviously, these are individuals that did resign. We did engage with them as part of the process. The board did engage because these are senior appointees that have resigned. And a big area for them has been around the Augusta contract, which we did discuss.
Which Augusta contract? The one asked by Mania or other contracts?
That's correct. I suppose any individual has an opportunity to resign at any time. But the particular contract is with the honorable member and Mania.
Yes. The one that he is.
Thank you.
How does the contract make senior officials to resign?
Well,
Then you should have allowed me to carry on.
Sure.
I'm saying, how does an abandoned contract cause a senior member to resign? I'm sure everyone should have.
From our perspective, from a governance perspective, and from the role of the board, we've acted in the best interest of the company.
Can I ask you to tell us why you say you can review for design, please tell us why. Because eventually the truth will come up. Somebody there will leak the board minutes to the DA will hold a press conference, if it's known by the press conference what the circumstances are. Use this opportunity now. Take us into your conference. Anticipate what they'll eventually need. And tell us now what are the circumstances around it. These critically important designations. I mean, Tingley was appointed specifically to turn this entity around. That was her main task. She's gone. She's going. Why? Tell us why.
Well, correct the statement about Ms. Kinley being appointed to specifically turn around the company. Saab has, at that stage, Saab has a management contract.
All right, okay. Just want to focus on that. Let's say you corrected, but then answer the substance of the question.
The substance of the question has a statement that the now Saab Aerostructures board met, evaluated the acquisition proposal, found that we could not support it as a board. It would take us back to the era where the now, as a holding company, entered into loss-making contracts, resulting in onerous cost obligations. If you look at our financial statements, we made a provision of over 500 million rand in a year for contract loss provisions. And the loss that we moved from 1.6 billion rand as a group to 500 million has been driven by the discipline around entering into contracts. And what we were looking at doing is to ensure that as we enter into future contracts, that there are no onerous obligations placed on the company. And that was our concern at the board.
Find a little unrelated question. When the previous chief executive was forced out by the previous minister, Alec Irwin, he left with a golden handshake of $3 million. What are the benefits? What benefits are the CFO and your CEO, the two resignees, what benefits are they using? What golden handshake?
So, with Chairman to respond, but we need to obviously separate the Danel as a holding company to a subsidiary, which is Danel South Aerostructures, where we own 80%. The example that you've given is at a holding company level where the CEO has resigned. And it's another key.
Okay,
that's
fine.
Let's just check
that.
Okay. With regards to the particular matter of what's happening for DSA, I'm not on the board of DSA, so it is not my place.
So it will
respond on behalf of the board of DSA.
So you are not the person.
What benefits are
they leaving? They are not leaving with any benefit than what they are entitled to.
What are they entitled to?
I think that's the question. What are they entitled to?
It would be the. Sorry, maybe I'll ask my financial director.
Okay. It mainly would be the lead team in terms of their policy. There's no lump sum some benefits that they are able to.
Is that effect?
Pension fund and whatever else.
Now you're coming. Oh, it would be their lead, pension fund, and.
Yeah, the director's question, is there a handshake on the table? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're looking for? And the answer is no. I think that's not a question, okay? So sometimes there really is nothing untoward in this particular instance. I have no reason to believe that on the basis of reports of the film, that there's anything beyond what the judge has been described.
Yeah, no, I think all that information, except for all the wanted information, and then the coverage that it has to be confident, use this platform to clarify issues, not allow them to, the rumor mill to flourish. But, yes, Honorable Steele.
Thank you, Chair. I'd also, before starting the question, I'd like to thank the Honourable Andy for his unsolicited endorsement. It's always good to hear from fellow members of the committee. Chair, I'd like to pick up on the very diplomatic term that the Danel executives have used, the revenue challenges, and specifically the fact that they're looking at an 85 million rand interest on borrowing. That must provide a significant revenue challenge. That's on page 20 of their report. And in light of that considerable interest on borrowing that they are faced, they must be looking, in terms of the turnaround strategy, with some urgency at actually establishing profitable and sustainable businesses. And for that, we are told that they are going to be needing to be looking at strategic equity partnerships. That was the term that was used in the report, and it's been used again today. In terms of those strategic equity partnerships, Chair, I'd like to ask to know, to say to us quite clearly, are there problems? Are there delays? Are there hindrances? What is the process in terms of achieving those strategic equity partnerships? Is there a holdup? And if so, where is that holdup? And what are they advising the shareholder of Danel in terms of those partnerships? So I'd like to know more about the process of achieving those strategic equity partnerships, please.
In some instances, and please, if I digress, you let me know. As we indicated earlier, the cornerstone of our turnaround strategy was equity partnerships. Now, it is well worth pointing out that there have been instances where we've attained this fairly rapidly, and this has worked well. An example is our equity partnership with Carl Zeiss and an organization called Carl Zeiss Optronics, which works quite nice, I think. It's an example of a success story. There have been challenges, and we've been talking about one of them, Daniel Sabet's project. And we've spoken about that quite abundantly. Now, it also must be borne in mind that these equity partnerships looked at in accordance with the various areas of activity, land systems, dynamics, missiles, and so on. And there needs to be input that informs our thinking that goes beyond the deliberations of the board regarding what, for example, may be considered sensitive, strategic, that one would want to pause and be extremely cautious before one seeks to have an equity, to conclude an equity partnership, in particular with an external company outside of South Africa. And there are times at the engagement with them, in particular with clearly directly our shareholder in the form of the Department of Public Enterprise, the engagement with DOD would then inform us in that regard. We cannot simply pursue some partnerships entirely in isolation. And there is, it has been noted that difficulties are primarily isolated to BSA. It is also the case that there are challenges in dynamic area, particularly in missiles. And this is something that we are looking at because we believe that a way forward from the perspective of wanting to not continue being a drain on the country is to seek a strategic partnership in that area. But this is an area that, where indeed, sensitivities with regard to whether or not we might not be compromising the strategic capability that one ought to look closely as one that one might want to keep in mind.
But,
Joyce,
I would
yes, thank you, Chairman. I think it's time that we should be honest, brutally honest with each other today. I mean, the main reason we're here is that we're looking at a public interest, and that's what we're talking about. Now, the CEO did say that they took the best decision in the company's interest. Now, we are dealing here with public money and the public interest. I cannot see that as long as state funds are used to prop up this enterprise, that the NEL will, in fact, advise the government to cancel doubtful projects. That's the way I see it. Now, let's just
before I get to my question about the rockets, the Royce Falcon is now 20 to 30 years old. It was, I think it was designed to withstand 20 millimeter or 0.50 Browning shells. It could have a, it has a nice chin gun to shoot at armored vehicles and at rockets to shoot armored vehicles. I don't see those armored vehicles on our borders anymore. I don't think South Africa has a use for the Red Falcon, and I don't think we can compete with America or the other big countries on the economies of scale. So we, I think we should be honest with each other and say that we should cancel this thing. Because we don't use it, we're not going to sell any of it. I think we have 12 in stock, and I don't know how many we sold. It would be very interesting to know that. But since they, having said that, that is what's bothering me about this whole Roy Fox thing. Now to get to the rockets. What is the business with the rocket program? Are we going to have orders? Are there any delays in this? What are these rockets? Are we shooting down airplanes? Or are we shooting at tanks? Is it anti-tank rockets? It's not state secret. I mean, you can look it up in the James Weekly and so forth. But I want to know, is it viable for us to keep something going at a big cost for weapons that we don't even know where we're going to use it? So please tell me, tell the committee, what's going on with the rockets? Thank you.
The Royal Park issue, which was the first part of the question, I think, is that policy issue that I think the Portfolio Committee can deal better with policy on this issue than maybe during the last part.
Chair, on pages 33 to 35, we provide you an overview, and I assume the rocket business the Honourable Member is referring to is our missile business. And on pages 33 to 35, we give you an overview of the type of missiles that are produced and the activities within the Denel Dynamics. Our view is that the missile business is not sustainable without either strong DoD support or to bring in a strategic equity partner in this business. And strategic equity partner for us will bring in improved market access. It will also bring in research and development, and it will help provide specific training requirements to our staff, because this is a high technology business, as you would see in terms of the product that it has been. And it's also a business that needs to be assigned to a global platform. As we've been manufacturing the Roypop, and the question is, although we wouldn't be erecting it, we have been producing products to be integrated into the Roypop, and also we are the Air Force that acquired the Gripen aircraft. We are also producing, we are in the process of developing a missile to be integrated with the Gripen aircraft. But going forward, and no doubt with the budgetary challenges that are in place, one would look at more optimal solutions that's cost efficient as well. But at this stage, our missile business is not sustainable.
Thank you.
statement of public safety, they obtained a very factor of calculation, no given beforehand. It means that they are paying for something that they are doing. That's what we want to spend. The question is that this denial so much is that the government is rather than finding the product, they want even dependent on the system. It is for them to share the information with the system, with the system, so that they can understand where the system is going. For them to use it, they have those issues rather than very important. This is the need that product has to come after the checkers, and it really depends on what they can target. Within the African continent, we look at the channel of the region, we are to fight the Somalians or what. It means that the closer relationship with the checkers is very crucial, so that they are planning in the camera with strategies are not based around marketing themselves more than the individual. If the client that I'm talking about the defense force. The capacity for the as of now, I don't have a terminal to win. Since we know the target identified by the defense force, there is no close relationship. That's why when we cancel the Echo 100, of course that they are taking this particular moment. And the doubtfulness of how much we will be able to get a local particular crisis, it's left in the hands of the chair. And I must say to you, you know, without these members of parliament, in the way you are handling the issue of the executive, it's a very worrying aspect. You put in, I mean, a product of yours and a company of your status, but just to contribute within the country. Now, I'm just saying that with the capacity that you are looking for to be able to help ourselves as a government, I have thought that we just then have met with the executive as of now to be able to interact with them, to let them understand the type of situation that we see. The question of bankruptcy is no longer all of us. It's not the question of us that you can tell us in different ways. We have been missing it to the fact that the name is in a crisis. It's not that it's an easy thing. And as we do, the name needs to be assisted by all of us being together with that is a crisis. It's not easy, and I thought that when one of our members were asking that question, I mean, we were trying to get more closer than that. That's the moment to tell the members of parliament that they have a crisis in their country, they took a crisis. But with the A400 and with the Roy Park, I mean, until the defense committee, depending on the leader, most of the services are not going to be able to be made a longer tunnel on its own without the action with us and without being able to help you to go with it before. And there's a portfolio committee on defense, and we've tried to tell them. We have not been having any interaction with them. So some of these programs that I'm talking about, the work part, the name is telling me, and if you want us to be influencing the ability to help you, the end of how open are you to explain the home problems that are taking place. And now, since I am not getting to go that we are explaining quite clearly to SCOPA, where we have to work with SCOPA to get an understanding of them, where we have to be able to help in and out of the crisis that we're taking. That's the biggest challenge.
All right, not comment. I really would want us to close it. Let's see if it would help the serious crisis and let that intervention is not made.
Mr. Chair, I need to follow up what the honourable member has just said because it relates to the answer that I was given to my question. I asked about the process of decision making and the way that Donnell and the Department of Defense and Public Enterprises are actually meeting the challenge. And the chairperson of Defense is now saying, and these are his words, that there's no close relationship between Donnell and the Department of Defense. So I go back to the answer that I was given. How is Donnell possibly making effective decisions about strategic partnerships if they don't have a close relationship with the Department of Defense? And what are they doing to correct this problem?
Now let's get the last two comments, then we'll call for everything so that we can Mania, and then
thank you, Chair. Really just a very brief question. It's evident from the Chief Executive Office's account of what took place in the Augusta Westland deal that the Cabinet did not consider the proposal.
the Department of Defense did consider the proposal and apparently supported the proposal. Danel and the Danel Saab Aerostructures Board did not support the deal on the basis that they believed that the deal was not profitable. Would the Chief Executive Officer be prepared to supply us or furnish us with a copy of their evaluation and the assumptions on which they based their conclusion that the deal was in fact not profitable? Because from what I know, Chair, if you have two economists, you have at least two opinions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to know, finally, just a comment. Would it be fair to say that the continued viability of Danel as a group rests on a couple of factors? The one, the risk of the Danel Saab aerostructures, the risk posed by that. Secondly, securing further recapitalization. Thirdly, a hands-on approach by the board. And fourthly, getting timeliest and appropriate cabinet decisions.
At this stage, we've got 11 standalone entities underneath the Danel Group.
each of the entities are represented by members of the Danel board. So they are involved in each of the entity boards. They are also subcommittees in place of each of these boards. And to correct the statement that was made by the Honourable Member about DOD supporting the transaction and Danel not, this is with Aran Kabruska. I think a more comprehensive answer is required, and I will go to it at a very high level. I think the issue was with Arms Corps. They were the procurement agency. They had to make a decision to accept Augusta's proposal or not. And at that stage, our feedback was that the Augusta board met and it did not approve the proposal that was on the table. Arms Corps board met in December and that proposal was not met. The now Saab Aerostructures then explored whether we should be meeting that commitment to Augusta. From our side, we had no legal obligation to make that penalty. Had we made that penalty, and if it was loss-making, it would have triggered us to write off that amount in our financial statement. And in terms of the PFMA, that could have then triggered a possible waste, fruitless and wasteful expenditure in our books. So it would have not strengthened our balance sheet. I know reference has been made to media speculation. There has been media speculation made to say this would have strengthened the now balance sheet. I'm an accountant, I'm not an economist. It would not have strengthened our balance sheet. It would have been a loss for us. So that's just to correct those statements, and I hope I've added some light to that issue. So from our side, we were not under legal obligation to make this payment. We were looking at it from a business perspective. And when we do consider decisions, as a state-owned entity, we do not only look at the economic issues around it. We look at a broad host of issues before we embark on any decision. And then in terms of the continued viability, I think the Honourable Member has pointed out the risk associated with the now South Aerostructures, the need to secure the recapitalization, because if one looks at our balance sheet, it is highly geared, which is not acceptable from our perspective. Other key aspects relating to our strategy is the one of strategic equity partnerships, because that was a key structural reform that we had undertaken in 2000.
I think you have spoken to that issue of partnerships.
Yeah. And productivity and capability is also critical in our business. It's to improve productivity and capability, and that's something we've been working on.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, comrades. And thanks to the leadership of tonight. Public enterprises, can we get a copy of your guideline on remuneration for state-owned enterprises? I think it would help a lot of us. You know, with all of these things up in the air about the public enterprises, state-owned enterprises, and the remuneration structure, I think it would have been something like that. Because we thought there were no guidelines. People could just wake up and decide what they wanted to do. Secondly, I want to request Comrade Chair, the issue of the deal with the Augusta that fell through. I'm sure if there are issues around it, you should be in a position to run with it. Because of time to change. Not purely from a business point of view, without excluding it, but from the fact that it has led to some action, people living in the new experience, contribute the stability of DNC. I think you could run with it. Secondly, it is the issue of the relation between NEM and DOD. I'm sure these are issues that you can handle, because they are still in outstanding issues within the department and within the NEM and the parliament. How do we connect with you? I'm sure you will be responsible to do that as well.
I just want to say that it might be important that we will talk about the turnaround strategy in a broader context in relation to why, in large measure, we call you here out and hope that you would have zoomed in on TSA and Dynamics, because those are your two loss-making subsidiaries. There, as Comrade Kolenov said, those are the rotten apples. So instead of talking to the whole basket, we would have said our main challenge currently is 1-2. And this is what we're doing to address these two shortcomings. So even the recapitalization thing would most definitely focus on those three issues, because they are not making anything. And I'm sure we would have loved to hear much, much more detail in terms of how we want to turn this around. They are the two not making anything. And some of the things, like I would say, these matters that I'm not important, if you go to page 20, last paragraph on your left side, say for particular importance the fact that the nail's order book is in excess of trauma at 15 billion. As compared to 3.7 billion. So you would expect that to be implying that the channel is in place to make it money. But you know there's no money. How to achieve it. So I'm sure these are matters that you could have been following now. But we would like to thank you very much for coming to the team for everything. Yeah, like we said, we wanted clarity, we wanted information. We think that it is not acceptable or correct that we would have this entity continuously making losses for 10 years. That should bring a lot of agency in getting out of that situation. I think you are expecting too much for Parliament and the public to continue to be forbearing. So we need to properly focus on the areas of challenge and put them out. And really hoping that the report coming out in September does not cause us to help this again. But wish you all of the best, and we hope you will keep on to the challenges before the end. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. The traffic doesn't come desire to say we look forward to appearing before the committee. And if we may ask, excuse Chair.
Well, you are, I must say, yours is the first. Someone looking forward to coming back. Okay. No, fine, thanks. Can we have a 45 second pause break as Janelle? I'm hoping that
earlier question throw some light on how we want to quickly dispose of the information. I once again want to make a request. Please, let's keep up the number.
Just a related question. I just find out who is the CFO?
Project has been implemented in 2013. So since 2007, you've been in the process of implementing an asset management program.
I've seen that capital. I think this question is being aware, because I've been in scope of since 2004. So I wanted the department itself to respond. Thank you.
I think you responded that the project will end in 2012. Can you continue? You still have input from it. Okay.
Chair, in terms of the measures in place that we have indicated, we had already started. We had also started a system upgrade with respect to ensuring that the extent to which we record our assets, capital assets, whether movable, is IT-based, given that our systems are different in a different environment. In that regard, we are engaging international traders as part of the integrated financial management system. There's a government-wide steering committee in that regard. And we had hoped actually that will be concluded soon, so that we can then be able to continue to procure that. But furthermore, on some of the movable assets, we continue to engage with the sister department of public works in terms of the routing and verification of those assets as well as recording them. And then to have a process that we've already started to begin to migrate from the manual accounting system to multi accounting system, so that at least in the next 2 to 3 years, we have the same integrated platform. And then, of course, roll out an integrated asset management system.
All right.
So those are the specific steps that we have begun to undertake, and so far as tangible and intangible assets are concerned.
In the response, it says they have engaged with the public works to assist in the process. But the biggest question I have in my mind now is whether public works itself will be able to assist, because it's got problems of its own in terms of their own assets. You know, do you think that they will be able to assist you?
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members. We think they will. In fact, we continue engagement even at the higher service, led by our minister and deputy minister, the two ministers, public works and also defense. But also, one of the key elements is to think at the evolution of the functions that public works is doing for us, so that we can then be able to do that for ourselves. And this is a point of discussion we initiated with the almost about a year or so ago, and in fact, as late as last week, our two deputy ministers also engaged, that is the deputy minister of defense and the deputy minister of public works, with teams from both sides to begin to then look at how we take this forward.
My next
question
is do you think that in the coming financial year, you'll be able to move a little bit? What
at the end of this financial year? Chair, honorable members, I can assure that we will have moved by the end of the next financial year. However, I cannot at this stage say we will have moved by 50% or 20%. And the reason for that is because this touches on quite a significant number of areas in the entire department, but also other stakeholder departments outside of our own department. Just to give you an example, with respect to...
Maybe progress, progress that's going on from time to time. But I'm looking to the next issue, which is...
Maybe before we move to the next issue, he has said that they hope to finish by 2012. So I would imagine that there will be milestones leading up to 2012. So you should be able to say in 2010, we'll achieve 80%. 2011, 70%, by 2012, 100%. But if there are no milestones, you're going to have, you know, a big bend somehow, by 2012, everything will be in place to respect it. I'm not, from where I'm sitting, I'm struggling to get a sense that 2012 is attainable. There are practical programs that can bring us from now to 2012. But just take that out. I'm taking it, you know, 2012, the fact of what you're told us.
I didn't want to be very hard on them. I was trying to be a bit subtle. It's unusual, yes. I'm taking into consideration that we have here an acting Secretary for Defense and also an acting CFO. And my colleagues know that I can be hard on them. Now I'm a bit subtle today. And I hope that what I'm requesting, that you keep us informed on the development and whatever progress you're making, you will communicate with us and the committee as well. Send that the chairperson is here. Let me move, chairperson, and go to the youth committee. As I have indicated, they are also flat as being serious. Now, these operating leases, I've got two issues with it. The overstatement and the understatement. The overstatement is starting from 07-08. 08-09, it's around 8 million plus. And then the understatement, the year before it was 171 million. Now, I want to go to the question. I don't want to go into this issue, you know, at length. Tell us how you will remedy this situation so that it doesn't get worse. And I'm going back into the systems question again. What systems are there in place to be able to improve what is happening? Since that you've had qualified opinion for the past 3 financial years.
Could I just quickly start with this? Before answering this, by indicating our commitment to move with respect to the last question on the next financial year, can be borne out by the fact that if you check the historical record since 05-06 to now, in 05-06 we had a significant qualification in 24, and over from that time. On the lease commitment, we are implementing corrective action. To start with the systems question, we are already looking at an IT-based lease commitment register and system. In fact, the plan is that we're going to acquire and develop an IT solution for SNFMI in this electronic lead management.
You're still going to be
No, I'm by 31st of March, 2010.
But Steve, you're still going to
be going to. If you have started already, can you indicate when you started?
We started
there in 2008. So the developing comes from the fact that if there is no internal capability for us to do that in terms of the IT basis, which we are finding, we may need to have a combination of an internal and like an external IT capability that we can then acquire and then be able to deal with our need management. So that we are able to determine at what point our systems are up, at what point to renew or we terminate the customer policy. And then also, we've already promulgated an interim lease management instruction, which complies with the national federal requirements. And then this was issued on the 15th of September 2009. We at least had hoped, we're still targeting by end of February, that we should develop a lease management training for use by commanders and managers within the department. There is already a lease management office that has been established, a dedicated person who is responsible for that. That we have set up and that has been started to work since we started the year. And then we are as well looking at verification of information that we receive with respect to our suppliers in our database and also update that. That task we had embarked on already in 2009 and that has been concluded by the end of December. That specific task was concluded. The one other factor, if I may check, it's with respect to lead contract. One of the issues that the Western General has raised was the matter of there being no actual lead contract. Instead, what we had was whatever requirements we said before public works, and then public works entered into the contract with whoever we need for. We started the discussions with public works, and we are aiming by the end of February to obtain the actual contract, at least copies thereof, of some of the lease facilities that we have. So those are some of the specific corrective measures that we have already undertaken, some high process to go forward.
So actually, finding contract. This is that you have is the challenge. And
so it is a matter we're dealing with. It was not a requirement that we have the contract ourselves.
Uh-huh.
Because we say to public works, we need a facility to accommodate X number of people in this particular region or town or area. And then public works then goes out and then enters into the contract with the public works then pays the particular entity, wherever the contract.
So you pay without having seen the condition for the lease agreement. How do you know it? How long the lease agreement is for? That's the situation.
Okay, we know the duration. We know the duration of the contract. In terms of duration, yes.
But I don't understand what the secretary said. Because in correctly so, let me ask you. If you take out money, what are you taking it out for? If you don't have the relevant documentation, this is where your problem is coming from. Your problem is coming from spending money when you don't have the documentation with you. What basis are you paying on? Is it a telephonic conversation? Are you sure that you're not overspending in terms of what you pay for. You're not certain when you see it. But Elia already gave us some of the responses. I wanted to say something. It seems like most of the issues that I'm raising, you started acting upon last year. And I bring it out that these issues have been qualified since 2006, 2007, even more earlier than that. Now, don't give us answers that will make me be hard on you. Just try and give us answers that will settle me to say that the department is working in progress. You're seriously working on it. Thank
I'm saying that the progress that we're achieving around supreme commitment are so because there are challenges around the management of human commitment. So there is no way in which you can accurately and 100% account for human commitment and condition.
document that requires for them to give and hear an opinion. What were the reasons behind? Who is this person who was supposed to give the secretary the document for him to pass them to the AG? If the person is known by the secretary, what measures have been taken against this particular person? Of course, with a name, not just at the institution. Thanks.
So it is a matter that we continue to address. Hence, earlier on, we indicated that the training
who was supposed to make sure that the justification is available. Because that person could not make the federal justification available and cause the department to have a qualification. What? Who is the person or who are the person and what did you do to not transfer for that person? What happened to that
person? I'm asking the people that have to deal with that specific problem.
Is this the person who is supposed to make sure you have the document? What do you mean?
No, I don't know if it's a good start. You didn't explain the response to that.
Let's make it simple. On page 248, point number 8, what the general talks about the unavailability of documentation for operating this is really for finance. Now the question is, who was supposed to make sure that documents are available to you so that when the AG wants them from you, he's able to get them? Who is or was supposed to make sure that documents are available? At this stage, all we want to say, Chief of Logistics or CFO or Officer Kudu there or whoever, that's the person who was supposed to. Who is the person who is supposed to make sure this documentation is available?
The this is spreading across the department, but under the command of different divisions and services, and coordinated by the district.
So the ultimate person is just logistics. Draws all these different strands together. It's settled throughout the various divisions, Air Force, Navy, this, that, but the person who coordinates everything, logistics. Right? That's where we are. That's where the bank stops. Now, logistics did not make all the necessary documents available to you. What happened to logistics?
At times, it is after the deadline that the auditor general has said. So by the time the report is finally presented, it appears as not having given. Sometimes the information has been provided after the third deadline that it has been provided.
I'm not sure whether the secretary is disputing the content of the AG's report or what exactly he is trying to do. Because the question is very straightforward. Who is the person? What happened to this particular person? I'm sure if you go and read PFMA chapter 7, section 38, subsection 1G, it will clearly tell the HOD, the secretary, that any manager within the department, within the institution, failing to comply and then institute what is supposed to be done, it is the responsibility of the secretary to sit on the neck of the logistic. Failing to sit on the neck of the logistic, therefore you go to section 40, chapter 7.
What does section
40
say? Thank you.
Chairperson, section 40 deals with what you need to do in the failure of the secretary. Not yet. And then we go to Machine Arusi. That therefore it doesn't say the minister, in essence, was supposed to be here, now take a decision on behalf of Parliament for this secretary. Because the failure of the secretary is tantamount to negligence of its responsibility. It's punishable.
I wanted to step beyond that, but to say, I'm sure you understand the logic of the question. You have a qualification because there is insufficient documentation. And these were supposed to be supplied to you by your chief of staff. And that did not happen. And here you are sitting with a qualification. What happened to the chief of logistics? Nothing. It might be that they made a general cognac. Because to get information from right across the department, people did not supply this information. But it goes back. What did you
do? Jefferson, I think you are putting us in a very difficult position. This is not under the decision. We want the name. Please think of one who did not supply you with the necessary information and what happened. You must answer a simple question. Why are we taking 5 minutes to a simple question, the name and the action taken? Otherwise, we are just wasting our time and we are not happy about that. We are not here to play games. We have other things to do. Just answer the question, who is the person, what did you do? Simple question.
The actions that have been taken are that we have gone on specific awareness training to ensure that every manager and commander knows the responsibility of the
action. You respect the person left for this big answer.
No, he was saying what action did they take after logistics did not apply. Now, so you are still correct. And I think what you're asking could be a follow up. Logistics, what happened? Why did you not get the necessary documentation that was needed? Yeah, so the action you took was to engage in training, awareness training. Okay? Manager Longonia.
Honourable Chair and members of the committee. I just want to put this in proper perspective in terms of the allocation of responsibility with regard to this management. This management has been a problem in the department, and until 07-08 period, the problem was identified that there was no a single person or division responsible for this management. And it was handed over to logistics in 08-09, of which the questions right now and the issues of whether or not I failed in the execution of my duties can be asked with respect to 9-10, which is the current period which the auditors will be busy auditing. With regard to the previous period, I was not responsible. That responsibility was tended to be when the procurement, some of the procurement decisions were transferred to the logistics division. Previously, that was under the director material, or chief director, the material of the defense force. That's where the it was residing. But another issue which I must this thing, which was really one of the aspects of the management of the NDCs was that when it came to facilities, that is, leases with regards to facilities, that was decided with logistics. And there was a kind
kind of a dilemma between us and PPW with regard to how do we interpret the Fiamma Act. According to Fiamma, which is the PPW, the custodian, and therefore they are responsible for the leases, as to who, how far they are responsible in terms of managing these documents, that was not defined between us and PPW. And this is one of the issues which we are addressing in terms of the management issues that are confronting us, PPW, and the Department of Defense. But to cut the whole story short, I'll be very gladly, you know, available to the members of the committee to answer with respect to the current year in terms of all the leases of the department. But for the previous year, I was not responsible for the management of leases. In fact, there was no proper system in place in the department. Thank you.
All right. Follow up on this.
I think we need to arrest this. The issue here, documents are supposed to be handed over to the accounting officer. That was not done, right? And it clearly means that the secretary here did not do his job properly, as outlined to the correct. Because you failed to receive the document timely, as a result, you could not give the document to the AG as requested. So you failed in your duty. Can you confirm that? You did. Did you?
Yes, I did.
Then?
No, you
will get a bad chance. You failed in your duty to do what you are supposed to do. Then why are you still here then? Why? Tell me why I'm still keeping the job. You are employed to do a job. You fail to do that job. Why are you still here? You are running a huge department. What happens to people under yourself who fail to do your job? You keep them? While they are failing to do their job, you do that.
Nobody will identify the people, but the people,
whoever is monitoring, whoever is supervising, whoever is managing, is not being done properly. So that's why people need to become aware when the decision will come. That's what it is. I think that's the number of the issue. Management, leadership, control, monitoring. But anyway, I wanted to step up. It's an area that is there, and I think it must be
why was there an understatement? That after I pointed why,
Was it because there was no documentation? Or was it because somebody wrote it as wrongly? What happened?
There had been insufficient information in one particular instance.
Insufficient information.
Yes, and then in another instance, it was with respect to payment of commodities. So all of those have been rectified by the quiet part in the process.
I'm a little bit worried because we are talking about 2008 and 2009. But he is talking now about 2009 and 2010. We are not on that one. We are on that other one. And I still believe that he's still going to give us the same answer as the gentleman has given us here, saying that time I wasn't there. If those are the problems that you are going to have. But anyway,
it's the cause for the understatement.
Mm.
The fact that they were insufficient information for the money information. The same issue we're talking about, supposedly there was insufficient information. That's why there was an statement of the
information. Let's continue. What does it say about the integrity of the financial systems and accounting capacity of the department? That's such an understatement. Good for Chair.
It says that it's maybe problematic. It is problematic in certain areas, and that is
it. I thought the CFO would be interested to make an input here. I think he answered better. I thought maybe the CFO, he will be able to give much more. The issue is, it shows that there are serious challenges with the financial system, especially in the department. That would be the long and the short of it. Unless
with
if you...
Corrected.
Yeah.
help determine what the remedial steps have been taken. We know that treatment should come in there and help you, but what is it that has been done to help this city? We've then determined the amount and we compiled a submission which we are going to give to the community to approve. But HR has started in terms of auditing the files of members in terms of the housing allowance.
You are complicating things.
Okay. Yes, I'm talking about the issues of 2008 to 2009. If you are going to compile a report now, then it means that we are talking about 2009, 2010. If an audit finding, a qualification, came about as a result of the year ended 31 March 2009, it is a qualification. We are rectifying it in this current financial year. If it had been rectified, it would not have been a qualification. That's why we are rectifying it in the 9-10 financial year. The audit report will come out and ensure whether what we said to do has been done or not. But we are not disputing the qualification. The qualification is there and work has been done.
Okay. No documentation for irregular expenditure of 77 million. Alternative audit could not be performed. Could the department provide this committee with an explanation for this lack of documentation? And how was this particular undocumented irregular expenditure?
Yes, can you get a report?
Chair, once again, this is in the area that has been indicated of the housing responsibility of the general address and will not provide documents to support. What action steps have been taken? Firstly, to have a new instruction book issued into the department so that we address the problem of the regular payment. And secondly, to undergo a process of identification, auditing the files. Of those members who may have received money that were not due to them. Thirdly, to ensure that we insert within our human resources system, human resource information system, to change it so that we can then, on the basis of the identification and the audit, we can then see any future payments to those who may not have been entitled. And we are also looking at the review of the housing policy in line with the public service policy and the campaign information in terms of what the service is expected. And we are ready to report progress by the end of March.
No correct accounting for irregular expenditure of 61 million. In terms of national treasury practice note 5, 81.5 million was condoned by national treasury. This relates to finance this payment. I think this one will address. I can just forget about it. Then I come to E. Note 28.5 to the financial statement highlights irregular expenditure to the amount of 1 million. This amount is not recoverable and not condoned and relates to the appointment of labor brokers for which authorization was obtained after the fact. The question is, could the department enlighten the committee on why the services of labor brokers were needed? And another one, if authorization was obtained after the fact, were the correct tender procedures followed? Thank you.
We are ratifying that process, and of course, we do need to discuss whatever amendment is made subject to what is the case of the committee. We are also could measures in place to ensure that all processes and procedures they are open to subject to any contracting or in person of any service at this time in the future.
The goods and service consultant expenditure of 2.9 billion on page 302 of the annual report. An amount of 193 million paid to consultants could not be verified due to lack of a proper control system and supporting documentation. No alternative audit procedure could be performed to verify the accuracy of this payment. Could the department explain what services it received for the unverified amount of 193 million? And how is it possible that 193 million of taxpayers' money spent on consultants cannot be verified and there's no supporting documentation?
The total figure of the 2.9 with respect to consultants covers a wide area of contractors, agency, outsourced services, ranging from whether we're talking about medical donor consultations, modifications to equipment such as aircraft or ships, and so on. So if one is drilled down to the detail to get to that issue, then it's that wide range. But specifically with respect to the 193, there was a board of inquiry instituted with respect to that, and it concluded its task last year already, in August 2009. And its recommendations are being implemented as we speak. There is also a process to draft, that should be finished now, this month, to draft a new contract with respect to the services that are being procured for the AMT. Now, in terms of saying what services, specific services will be acquired against that. These are services with respect to maintenance and repair of our systems, in particular within the Air Force environment. And in fact, it is the Air Force that took the steps to meet the treaty for the requirements, and then they should begin to act on the accreditation of that policy.
It is not the problem, it's not that you didn't use the money, you did use it. The AG is only worried that you people never brought the documentation to you at that moment when you wanted it. That's why he's talking about the 193 million. We know, as you are explaining now, we are talking about medical fees, equipment that are to be repaired and whatever. That we do understand. But at that moment, the AG wanted those documents to be there so that you will be able to verify what is it that really used it for. Because here you are just talking about consultants, and we are worried, it's a lot of money, 193 million. It's a lot of money when you pay a consultant.
Chair,
this particular matter actually goes back quite some time.
I I think the issue is the fact that money was paid and there's no documentation. That's the point.
That's so can we get a copy of the report of the findings, which they're referring to, of this inquiry?
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, if the airport has answered that the secretary does not have, it raises the question of who is in charge. I don't prefer when we hear it to every panel, but they come out and just sending decisions that are so negative. But that's the best report. The issue here is documentation. In AG, we talk about lack of documentation, but they're not there.
The 193 million rand is for 600 people, the salaries. Now, I must upfront admit the Auditor General is correct. We have a Air Force instruction spelling out in detail how this must be done. But over time, this has sort of eroded, where the result is that when Auditor General turned up and said, please provide these documents, the people responsible for that couldn't do it. Also, people were transferred out, and the ones remaining behind were not properly properly trained. So we are really guilty as charged. Here is the copy of the Board of Inquiry, which is done. We have to go now from 1 April 2008 to the end of the financial year. We have to check and verify each of these statements which is currently being done.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Leave on utilization of consultants, pages 137. Could the department extend the various projects awarded where the zero waste relation yet payments were made? Project D, 0202.
Seven days is the number of people.
the companies are...
Seven people for two companies. That's what it means.
Sorry, no, I think we just wasting time here. In my view, you know, I tried to be a bit light at the beginning, but we're not really getting the answer. It's a waste of time. I think the department must go back. And when they come back, they must give us answers. You know, there's also another document which we are not referring to. On the cases, the number of cases is actually huge, outstanding. I don't know if my colleagues here share my sentiment on this matter, but I would propose that the department goes back and comes back another time to give us answer that we require. Thank you. What are you going to say?
I don't believe we've got a single straight answer. We are forcing answers out of officials, and then even then we're not getting the entire thing. I would support that we terminate these hearings now, that we sit at a later stage, and maybe we assist the officials with such even a pre-prepared set of the kinds of things we want, in addition to what is raised in the AG's report, because clearly they have come unprepared. But to sit here and get another time and a half or 2 hours with this quite kind of approach, at least kind of answers, is really a waste of time.
All right. Yes, Congress, I'll give you 1 minute.
I'm reluctant to compare. My worry is, it looks like, Chairperson, we are facing here with a time bomb. A time bomb in the sense that here you have a department which is a guardian of our security. Strategic one at that. I do understand that you have the management who doesn't know what the left is doing. The right does not know what the right is doing. It's problematic. But I think Chairperson said that they are pertinent issues. Because some of the things that have been raised by the master, if you talk to the heart of the procurement or the supply chain management of the department in question. And if we prolong that, we may wake up Chairperson having no army at all. That is why I'm supporting the notion, but I think there are some serious issues that need to be addressed between now and the time we have the next hearing. And specifically, Chairperson, this speaks to the head of the supply chain management, the head of that, Mr. Zondi, I'm sorry. Because I just want to find CKT here that the information at my disposal, Chairperson, is that every time he was appearing before this court, he was not vetted. Has he been vetted now? Because Mr. Zondi, the head of supply chain management, there were several issues that he did not declare his interest for two entities. Crossroads Consulting and Classic One Consortium, which at the time it was alleged that he is part of those consortium, and he did not recuse himself from the hearing. Here we have a person information that he was sitting on the procurement committee awarding his own conduct. That is it. It can't wait. I don't agree. It just cannot wait. And the investigation by the Inspector General in this regard, I think that cannot wait. while I agree with him, these are putting net issues in, because for me, talk to the heart of the problem. Because if this is true, it means we are talking about it, the world corrupt of it all. And we cannot allow a situation and this oversight committee to continue, Mr. Petrica. Thank you.
I think if we are in agreement, I'm just trying to find my two comrades who have raised their hands. Maybe let's not belabor the point. Then I'll give comrades a short session and then we'll come to the issue that the comrades have raised. Comrade Kourouzian?
Yeah, I think one issue that I was going to talk to is exactly that, to say, realizing that issues that we have been raising them, which caused us to say we cannot continue with this hearing. We are doing it in the presence of the chairperson of the portfolio committee, whom I believe, together with the committee, they will then sit with the issues that have been raised by my colleague, to say, while we agreed to postpone, there are pending and pertinent issues that need to be looked into. I believe they are in the hands of the capable chairperson, who has then sharing this sentiment with us. He will, in the meantime, while we are waiting for the hearing, sit on the issues that we are raising to make sure that until we are continuing the hearing, we remain having the security in this country. I think I would want to emphasize that. Let's postpone efforts for 45 minutes.
Okay.
I suppose that we push on. There's a couple of things we need to sort out. I think Honourable Steve will touch on that.
Honourable
Steve,
do you want to say we must continue?
Sure. I think there are clearly systemic weaknesses in this department that we need to look at from the point of view of financial management and which the Portfolio Commission is looking. And those are perhaps issues that we need to reserve for another day, because we're not getting answers to any of those systemic problems. There are a couple of particular decisions, some of which are coming up in the near future, some of which relate to the immediate past, that I think we could usefully use the time that we have available to us with the number of officials that we have with us today, so that we do not waste the time and the opportunity that is here that we can usefully use.
Yeah. Well, let me say, comrades, that I'm persuaded to say let's agenda here. I think that the issues that Honourable Steve is concerned about, they are not thrown away. They are issues that will still engage with, but for maybe say, maybe in terms of no. Just keep that on the committee. All issues that arise from this annual report, the issues we still want to engage the department in. And I suppose maybe the engagement that we've had would have assisted the department to have a sense of the extent and the depth that we go to in terms of our questioning, and therefore the level of preparedness and the trajectory of their responses to be able to measure. The issue that is being raised part of the annual report, so we'll deal with it in that particular context. No, please, can I beg your indulgence? Please, check.
No, Chairperson, you say I'm supporting this, but I'm asking, I don't know what I'm going to do. But I am the Secretary of the Department in the House. This is the type of discussion taking the Parliament to the question. I have done that. I'm saying that I know and I understand what you're saying, but I, as the Secretary of Defense on Sunday, when I hear that you want. And this report is not that it's seen for the first time. The portfolio committee has been taking me through line by line to try to understand the concerns. We have treasury, we have the auditor general, recently the secretary of defense and his team, even before we even
that in the portfolio committee. So that's what Chuck is showing, that the board is telling me this issue. Now I'm so satisfied that that has the expecting me to do, and myself to do. But they are employed. They are employed, and we are paying them to be happy. And I don't understand why they are saying this thing, this report, don't remember yourself. You were here, and the body director has himself told us that go through the report and reflect on that, and I will be happy. And you are repeating the same thing you've been asking and getting the same support answer. So from our side, as a portfolio committee, every collective is full. We've been interrogating this thing. We thought that you're going to help us to assist in the country, put back in front of us what is it that we need to do to help the community happen. This is the top management. This is your top management of the defense. These are the people who are fighting. When you talk about the military, you talk about this money. You're not talking about anybody else. You're not going to see anybody else beyond the people who are in this country. And I don't understand why. I don't understand. Yes. I mean, I don't see the fear of. This booklet is not being issued today here in front of them. It's been with them for a very, very, very long time. And I don't understand what makes them do to the country you have. But it's you and me who could only be able to give them guarantees. And it's a very good department, and we're doing everything to help members of parliament. You can see sometimes the opposition and everybody will run across the country. So I'm saying for the last time that give them the opportunity to go to them, but don't expect the portfolio committee to help. We'll come back with them and come and listen to them. You say that what you do that they are providing a solution. We are concerned about the security of the country, of the country. We've got 20 people around the country. The top management still don't know what to do to give cancer. Leasing. I know that it's a difficult question to all of us. One way is a different documentation. We spend the whole day, more than an hour, trying to find documentation. Why shouldn't we have been? They should have known by now that this thing is the handicap in the department. I don't understand really, but we will do, as I see my colleagues, we'll work together. But really, I'm disappointed in the way they're conducting. I'll send it to Dinner, I'll send it to them also. That if you don't know respect to Parliament, you can't expect us to come to your rescue. We're not here to come and deliver our questions. We put together on you to deliver better results of how we arrive at the financial. We expect officials to also stand up in the market. There's no way I'm going to be allowing members of Parliament to play around and to kick around their board. We have got a responsibility here in front of the country. We have most instances people during the elections and even now. Across board, we get the news that nobody is official. Nobody knows them. We're the ones that when the defense goes wrong, everybody will be running for us. And I don't understand how that can happen. I'm saying that I had the Secretary of Defense on Sunday. I have the LCACC on Sunday. I sit on my cell phone and say, did you see what is going on in the city? Prepare so that when we come to scoff us, we are quite ready to give them answers. So there's nothing that I can say that is different from us.
My name?
think what we would want to do, and let me say, Comrade Chairperson, we had the same situation with the Department of Housing, nationally, provincially, the city of Cape Town. Let me speak to housing, because we had to postpone and allow them to come back. And I think when they came back, they were a little better prepared. So that gives me hope that having had a sense of our trajectory, maybe they can sit down and better prepare themselves. But like we said, we want that the executive authority be here, so that some of the questions that we're asking, that if things are like this, what should happen? Only the minister can be in a position to guide us, or she can be in a position to say, how does she in the interaction with the department, you know, zone in on some of the key and strategic weaknesses that might have arisen in the course of my nation. So we would want to call a halt to the proceedings. And we will work on it very soon, because some of the issues that member trains go with daily or that we deal do require that we talk to them soon. But we'll be happy if to have the minister around as well. So that when we go through the issues, then we also can have it. We want to come together and say, what are the challenges and how can we find solutions? All of us. I think that's a very big thing we should want to do. But we nonetheless want to thank you very much for having any time to be here. It was not a wasteful and fruitless exercise, but I'm sure it has given you an insight into how we want to deal with it. But it's also a big thing to have a sense to appreciate So, our next meeting hopefully will take a look at this one. Show you back. Thank you very much, Kali and Mr. Poole. Mr. President, I was
watching that. Thank you.